Now I heard Sun Ra in 1957, and that really kind of turned my head around. He perceived the music from Fletcher Henderson straight through to the next century.
You can see him as the one of the great avant-gardists in the second half of the 20th century. You can see him as the great Afrocentrist who pushed Afrocentrism to the planets, you know, went way beyond Egypt and all the rest of it.
Space music is definitely on another planetary level.
Space is the place. Space is the place. Space is the place. Yeah, space is the place. Outer space is a pleasant place. A place that's really free.
The name of Sun Ra resonates out of the tombs of Egypt. But somewhere, the sun god took a turn into the clubs of Chicago and the nightlife of jazz. He began cloaking strange new sounds in mythology from Egypt to the rings of Saturn.
Space, out of space, space, out of space, it's a pleasant place,
it's a pleasant place,
space.
Whether he was disdained as a charlatan or revered as a pioneer, there is no denying the influence of Sun Ra on several generations of musicians. Along with Ornette Coleman, Cecil Taylor, and John Coltrane, Sun Ra revealed another direction for jazz. Was an avatar of free improvisation and was the first to bring electronics and synthesizers into jazz. But this space traveler was also a pianist for the Fletcher Henderson Big Band. He accompanied Lil Green, Dakota Staton, and Della Reese and sang Duel. I'm Nancy Wilson. And on this edition of Jazz Profiles, Sun Ra's Cosmic Swing. Sun Ra is one of the few jazz artists who attained mythic, bigger-than-life proportions. He didn't lead an orchestra, but an orchestra. It was an arc that embodied many sounds, styles, and cultures. The names changed as rapidly as the music. The Myth Science Orchestra, Intergalactic Space Research Orchestra, and Astro Infinity Orchestra. In his biography, Space is the Place, The Lives and Times of Sun Ra, John Swed found a figure who embraced contradictions like a Zen koan.
I still like the idea that he's the last of the great romantics. He believes that music has a power which exceeds the ability of the mind to grasp reality, that it is the closest you can come to certain kind of godlike experiences. It's a model for a kind of reality which isn't otherwise available directly to the mind.
In 1981, the portly bandleader sat on the front stoop of a rundown row house in Philadelphia. It was an unlikely residence for a musician who claimed he came from outer space.
Planet Earth is an unlikely place for me even to be. I don't belong. I'm here. I was sent here.
While Sun Ra talks, cars drive by. Children play in the street. And neighbors drop by to say hello.
Hi. Okay. Come on over.
Sun Ra had a purpose higher than money or acclaim. He said he believed his big band, which stretched from 11 to over 100 musicians, was a model for a better world.
A band can serve its purpose of unified and showing that men cooperate together for something unselfish, you know? That's one of the secrets of why people stay with me, because they can develop themselves through sound, and they can do things, incredible and marvelous things.
Sun Ra and his orchestra with Theme for the Stargazers. For fans of Sun Ra, it was sometimes difficult to embrace every aspect of the band leader. Some who championed his avant-garde explorations were aghast when he began playing swing music. Some who thought his stage show pointed the way to a multimedia future had to cringe when Ra said he was zoomed into space by a transmolecular beam.
Well, I went to another planet. I don't know what planet it was, but it was another planet. It was a totally different beings who looked like they were human. They were dressed differently, and they had a huge auditorium there where I was sitting in there.
Biographer John Swift.
If you're enjoying Sun Ra, you had to bracket some of this material. You had to ignore some of it, the embarrassing parts, the parts you didn't understand or whatever. And when other people came and said, what is this? Those who were into it would just not even know what they're talking about anymore.
It's after the end of the world. Don't you know that yet? It's after the end of the world. Don't you know that yet? It's after the end of the world. Don't you know that yet?
Sun Ra would have us believe he came from outer space, arriving in a clash of swing, electronics, free improvisation, and a maze of cosmic metaphysics. For most of his career, he obscured his earthly existence, denying any connection to a man born as Herman Poole Blunt.
That's an imaginary person. Never existed. I had a sister and a brother named Blunt, but that father was dead 10 years before I arrived on the planet, so it couldn't possibly be my father. So therefore, it's not my name. One time I used it as a synonym, but in the Library of Congress, they got it down there. That's any name I use other than Ra is a synonym. It's right up there. You can go and see the card yourself.
In Birmingham, Alabama, John Swed discovered the truth of Sun Ra's arrival on the planet.
There are no birth certificates available, but that's not unusual for the South, or for that matter, for anyone from that era, I think. Herman Poole Blunt is the name on his school certificates and school records. And his birth date is listed as May 22nd, 1914. As to why he would conceal that, I suppose it's, as he put it, he wasn't interested in time, and time and he didn't get along. In fact, he put it one time, said it was better not to know such things.
But Sun Ra did have a family, with brothers and sisters who were mostly raised by his maternal grandmother and great aunt. They were restaurant workers living a block away from Birmingham's train station. It was here that Sun Ra first started playing music.
Well, you know, when you go to public school, at least the one I went to, they teach you do re mi fa sol la ti do. And that's really all you need to know if you listen to the teacher, because if you can sing that, that's the beginning of it, and that was the start of it. Then one day I came home, I had a piano for a so-called birthday present, you know. So I played it. You know. It was one of those things where birds learn how to fly, babies learn how to talk, and that's where I did the piano, I just played it.
Sun Ra, in 1977, playing Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. It's one of the songs he would have heard growing up in Alabama. Sun Ra claims the piano and reading music came to him naturally.
Well, you see, at that time, I played the piano. I was reading, you see, because my grandmother liked church songs. Well, she put that up there, so I played it. There's a friend of mine that played violin. He'd taken music, and he said I was playing it by ear. And he went home and got some classics, so he put that up there, so I played that. Everything they put up there, I played it. I read it.
Studying music in school and absorbing the Birmingham jazz scene, Sun Ra got his dance band wings from Professor Watley. He was a shop teacher who also had students playing in his society bands. Attending Alabama A&M, Sun Ra took teacher's training, but his real vocation was music. Throughout the 30s and into the 40s, he led his own big band, playing music by Jelly Roll Morton, Charlie Barnett, and Duke Ellington. Sun Ra would revisit this music in the later years of the orchestra. In 1946, Ra gave up his Birmingham orchestra and moved to Chicago. There, he played in Red Saunders' group, recorded with Eugene Wright's Dukes of Swing, and even did the bump and grind for strippers. He also got to play with one of his heroes, Fletcher Henderson. Henderson led a big band in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and his arrangements formed the core of Benny Goodman's early book.
When I ride on the planet, I always like music that was together. And that was the most together music I ever heard, as far as like what you call unselfish and dedicated, and that's where Fletcher Henderson was. And you can find on early records that he was just an innovator.
Fletcher Henderson was near the end of his life when Ra joined up with him in the late 1940s. Later in his career, when Sun Ra was at the height of his avant-garde renown, he returned to the music of Fletcher Henderson, making it a part of his repertoire. These weren't avant-garde reinterpretations, but faithful reproductions. Bassoonist James Jackson.
You had to sort of like put yourself in the position of those musicians who was in Fletcher's band. Because Sonny said, well, you know, like copying is one thing. We need to recreate this music. We had to have a personal relationship with that time that when that song was written and when it was performed.
Sun Ra, in 1980, performing Fletcher Henderson's Big John's Special. After Fletcher Henderson left Chicago in 1947, Sun Ra stayed on at the Club de Lisa, where he wrote and arranged shows. Playing throughout the Windy City, he backed everyone from Billie Holiday to Johnny Guitar Watson. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, Sun Ra's Cosmic Swing. While Sun Ra was in Chicago, he became involved in a research group that studied the Bible, Egyptian mythology, and the teachings of the Armenian mystic G.I. Gurdjieff. As a young man, Sun Ra saw the Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon movie serials, and these images were spliced into his philosophical matrix. Soon, talk of space led to the music of space. Sun Ra began realizing a different sound and formed the Space Trio. Tenor saxophone player John Gilmore was an early member of the trio. Gilmore was already a veteran musician. He had played with Earl Hines and would go on to work with Art Blakey, Andrew Hill, and others. Sitting on the front stoop of the Philadelphia House in 1981, with an orchestra rehearsal drifting out the windows, Gilmore says he first thought Sun Ra was just another gig.
He was playing a lot of standard tunes with a trio. We weren't playing a whole lot of his arrangements. It was mostly standard tunes, you know, so it wasn't too much of a problem, you know. About 6 months later, we were playing this number Saturn, and I really heard it for the first time. I heard it, and then that's when I knew. I knew, you know, I wasn't just up there playing. I said, "Nah, this guy is somewhere else." You know, I could hear those intervals.
Sun Ra playing Saturn. By now, Herman Poole Blunt had been transformed into Sun Ra, a name derived from Ra, the Egyptian sun god. At the same time, his band grew. Musicians in his group included baritone saxophonist Pat Patrick and Charles Davis, bassist Ronnie Boykins, trumpeter Hobart Dotson, saxophonist James Balding, and drummer Clifford Jarvis. Alton Abraham was Sun Ra's partner, fellow spiritual traveler, and financial backer. Together, they formed Infinity Incorporated and the Saturn record label, which would go on to release over 130 Sun Ra albums. Abraham recalls the early days of Ra's intergalactic travel.
He called it space music at the time, and he was warning the musicians that they had better stop playing around and they should start rehearsing and learning and be prepared for the new electronic space age that was coming. This was before the Russians launched their first Sputnik. You see, we were talking about space travel, talking about and wrote songs called Rocket Number 9, Take Off to the Planet Venus.
Rocket Number 9, Take Off for the Planet, to the Planet Venus. Rocket Number 9, Take Off for the Planet, to the Planet Venus. Rocket Number 9, Take Off for the Planet, to the Planet Venus. Rocket Number 9, Take Off for the Planet, to the Planet Venus. Go, go.
In Chicago, Sun Ra was always working with stage shows and dancers, and he brought that theatricality to his performances. Sun Ra's concerts became part carnival, part cosmic sound machine, and part Egyptian stage show. Over the years, slides of pyramids were projected on the stage. Dancers would cavort, spaceships would rise up in the midst of the orchestra, and the band walked out into the audience like an avant-garde conga line. Saxophonist Marshall Allen was an early member of Sun Ra's flight crew.
Well, we was doing that because, see, Sun Ra was in the show bands and things, and so we had to have like with lights and colors, and we had film, and then we had all these little things. And we had a great big globe, and we had all the little colored costumes, and everybody would dance and sing, like a show band.
Trumpeter Michael Ray.
I mean, I can look back at some of the things that we've done. I mean, I used to play my trumpet standing on my head, flips, jump off the stage.
Sun Ra would wear flamboyant costumes, spangled with the planets, and headdresses that looked like misshapen models of the solar system.
Sometimes I have to reach people with very simple things, like masks and certain costumes and all that. Like the other day in New York, a fellow came out of a store, and he told me how he liked the band. But he said, I can't hear good. I can't hear very well. But I like your music because I like your movements. And you see what I'm talking about. Sometimes I might show a movie to magnify the idea of what I'm doing. And I have to do that. Everybody's not a genius, you know.
John Swed.
Costumes were music. That this was part of the deal. You should come on the stage musically, that is presenting a certain thing. You should walk musically. You should present a certain attitude as you come out there. And from the first second, you can get the audience.
Slowly, the world began to hear about Sun Ra. His Saturn label ran small pressings of 45 RPM singles that would be sold at performances. Sun Ra was already infusing his music with electronic sounds. Even back in Alabama, he played a device made by Hammond organ called the Solovox. It attached to the piano and emulated the sustained sound of strings.
Fascinated by the sounds. I can do things with synthesizers. Like if I want to create a feeling of thunder, it's there. If I want to create a feeling of space, it's there.
Sun Ra playing the clavolin on Magic City. In addition to electric organs and pianos, forgotten instruments like the clavolin, the Space Master, the Roxy Chord, and the Celeste all found their way under Sun Ra's fingers. And as soon as Robert Moog made his synthesizer, Sun Ra had one. With his keyboards, Sun Ra could evoke the voices of angels or summon up the demons. Sun Ra playing synthesizer. Sun Ra's fondness for electric keyboards was contrasted with an extensive use of ethnic instruments. Long before the world music craze, the orchestra played African percussion and koras and Japanese kotos. At any point during an orchestra performance, the entire band might be playing percussion of one sort or another. When the orchestra landed in New York City, their influence was felt throughout the new jazz community. That's just ahead. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, Sun Ra's Cosmic Swing from NPR, National Public Radio. Sun Ra eventually departed Chicago, leaving behind the seeds that would form the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians. That organization spawned many influential artists, including the Art Ensemble of Chicago. He arrived in New York City in 1961. It was a time when Ornette Coleman, John Coltrane, and Cecil Taylor were all appearing on the scene, offering a new direction for jazz. Sun Ra influenced many of these musicians. Veteran alto saxophonist Jackie McLean remembers the first time he saw Sun Ra.
That really kind of turned my head around. He and Mingus had a great deal of influence on me. He perceived the music from Fletcher Henderson straight through to the next century.
Sun Ra playing Ethiopia. Saxophonist John Coltrane was another musician who fell under the bandleader's spell. He met Sun Ra in Chicago in the mid-50s and remained in contact over the years. Coltrane admitted that he listened closely to Ra saxophonist John Gilmore before making Chasin' the Train. In 1981, while the orchestra played inside their Philadelphia house, John Gilmore remembered Coltrane coming to one of his non-orchestra performances with Willie Bobo.
Well, what really happened, I couldn't play with them, so I had to play against them. I couldn't play with them. I mean, they were swinging a different way, and I was from Chicago. I was swinging another way, and they were swinging the New York way, and neither one of them was getting together, you know. So I played some stuff that was counter to what they were doing, and it worked out perfectly. And it shook Train up, you know, it shook him up. You know, it shook him up. He came running from the back of Birdland screaming.
Yeah.
Sun Ra's Space Aura with tenor saxophonist John Gilmore. It's in New York City in the 1960s that Sun Ra's avant-garde reputation was solidified. To the uninitiated, his marathon concert seemed like random chaos, but for Ra, it was all part of a design. In a 1981 interview, longtime orchestra member and baritone saxophonist Danny Thompson said they rehearsed constantly.
Well, we rehearse every day. And in fact, we're getting ready to rehearse now. We rehearse maybe sometimes 6, 7, 8 hours a day, more than that, sometimes 10 hours a day. You know, 7 days a week too. So nobody really knows what tune we're gonna do. Sometimes I write, we got thousands upon thousands of compositions. You know, and you have to just be prepared, you know, at a moment's notice, pick up any one of them.
When Michael Ray lived in the orchestra home in Philadelphia in the 1970s and 80s, he remembers that music started first thing in the morning.
I used to wake up with Gilmore practicing on long tones, just on his mouthpiece. And then by the time he put it in his horn, still playing long tones. And 4 or 5 hours later, he's warming up, playing some, you know, like violin scales or some sort of arpeggios. And then go downstairs and start rehearsing. And we'd rehearse until Sonny fall asleep. And it's really strange because he'd be playing and all of a sudden you hear, and fell asleep. Everybody starts sneaking out the room. They wake up, try it again.
Like Duke Ellington, Ra composed specifically for the musicians at hand, whether it was the dusky singing of June Tyson or the slurring trombone of Julian Priester. Sometimes he was more concerned with emotions and images rather than notes on a page.
I remember Sonny saying, play a Revving Motor, play a Revving Motor. I said, Sonny, how can I play a Revving Motor? He said, well, play your idea of a Revving Motor.
James Jackson.
So you're going to, you know, in your head, you're going to try to play a sound as close to a revving motor as possible, because those are just different tones, you know? And that's why he kept emphasizing being a tone scientist rather than a musician, because he said musicians are a dime a dozen.
Sun Ra and the Myth Science Orchestra with And Otherness. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, Sun Ra's Cosmic Swing. Sun Ra relocated the band to Philadelphia in 1968. About the same time, he made a film called Space is the Place. The plot followed Sun Ra, who travels through space and arrives on Earth to rejuvenate the black race.
This is Jimmy Fay, Channel 5 Stone Jar, the all-black station for all black people with all the news that grooves at noon, live from Oakland, California. As you are probably aware, several local mystics have predicted a landing from space this afternoon here at this spot opposite the Sector 5 government building in the person of a black musician and thinker named Sun Ra.
I haven't seen him yet. He should be here any time now.
He's reported to have disappeared while traveling in Europe in June 1969. He's reputed to have been traveling traveling in outer space all this time with his intergalactic mid-sized solar orchestra. And upon landing here, will reveal to the world his so-called plan for the salvation of the black race.
Where the hell is he?
Until it was released on video, Space Is the Place was rarely shown. But it did yield one of Sun Ra's most enduring songs.
Space is the place. Space is the place. Space is the place. Yeah, space is the place. Outer space is a pleasant place. A place that's really free. There's no limit to the things that you can do. There's no limit to the things that you can be. Your thought is free. And your life is worthwhile.
Space is the place.
Sun Ra's Space Is the Place. Even as Sun Ra began to prick the popular consciousness, he was severely criticized inside the jazz community. John Swed has collected his own lexicon of musical invective against Sun Ra.
Betty Carter went to great lengths to point out that he was a fraud, and the critics in America particularly were very hard on Sun Ra. So a Leonard Feather is quoted in one interview as saying no comment when he's asked about Sun Ra. Then Preslittle Moore said, I'm not going to talk about Sun Ra, okay?
For many critics, Sun Ra's cosmology stood in the way of the music. But for many listeners, that was part of the raw package of a utopian world, fueled by sound. British journalist and composer David Toop believes that Sun Ra created his own mythology.
Now, I think he used that partly as an escape from an intolerable situation and partly as a vision of a different kind of life that was more just and more dignified than the one he had been forced to live. So it's a metaphor on one level, but it's also an escape that if you find life on earth painful, then music creates another world.
Mythology, astro timeless immortality, astro thought in mystic sound, astro black all outer space, astro.
As part of his cosmology, Sun Ra reveled in wordplay, spinning around meaning the way he spun time signatures and melody. He published several books of poetry called The Immeasurable Equation. Sitting on his front stoop, he opened up one of them.
The future is my world of the greater tomorrow, the mythical world of another kind of life. Yes, the future is my world of the greater tomorrow, because although it is said that tomorrow never comes, it refers only to the tomorrow that never touches the eternity of the past. And it is recorded in the past that tomorrow never comes.
Sun Ra was sometimes accused of running a cult. With his mystic philosophies and a group of black men living together, Unkind Eyes could see it as a mix of Jim Jones and a hippie commune. Talking to a member like the late Ilo Omo, you might be inclined to believe it.
The music have a message in it from the creator. I hear things when I perform with the orchestra, especially during rehearsal. I have messages from the cosmos. He's my leader, and I must follow.
Definitely no Jim Jones. It's nothing like that.
Danny Thompson.
You know, we're here to enlighten people's minds about outer space and try to better this planet, try to present culture. This is music. It's pure music, and it's jazz.
Sun Ra playing Hours After. Sun Ra always seemed on the brink of success. He was on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. Bands like the MC5 and the NRBQ were playing his songs. And he even appeared on Saturday Night Live. But he seemed incapable of capitalizing on these events. He continued to record and perform relentlessly until 1990, when he suffered his first stroke. For many musicians, that would be the end, but Sun Ra kept touring. He had to be carried on stage where he sat impassively at a keyboard, barely moving, yet still leading his band of musicians. After suffering another stroke and a heart attack, he held on for several months. But finally, Sun Ra left the planet on May 30th. Many orchestra members have also left the planet since Ra's passing, including John Gilmore, James Jackson, Ilo Omo, and longtime singer June Tyson. But the orchestra continues, led by Marshall Allen. Michael Ray has his own band, the Cosmic Crew, doing originals and Sun Ra compositions. Sun Ra's influence stretched beyond jazz and into rock. The staging and theatrics of Earth, Wind, and Fire and George Clinton and the collective improvisations of Phish and Sonic Youth all bear Sun Ra's cosmic imprint. Sun Ra said that he wouldn't acknowledge his birth because he wouldn't accept his death. Although he is gone, his music has achieved its own immortality through those who hear it.
I think he changed art.
James Jackson.
All the artists on the planet were changed because of Sun Ra. He made them recognize that, you know, you got to deal with all of this that you can see and all of this that you can't see.
John Swett.
in his case, what it was about was reaching a lot of people at levels they weren't reached otherwise. And you can talk to musicians or fans who can tell you at certain points of their lives they weren't ready for this. And, you know, I thought it was nonsense. And then 5 years later, say, I had like this transcendental experience that changed my life.
Tribute to Sun Ra's Cosmic Swing was written, produced, and mixed by John DiLiberto. Special thanks to Jerry Gordon, Evidence Records, John Swed, and the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. Additional thanks to Kimberly Haas. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer is Madeline Smith. Website coordinator is Bettina Owens. The executive producers are Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. To email us or get more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.